Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Photo Vector Program number 1039, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on December 11th of the year 2018. Due to some infrastructure repairs here at the station, it is not technologically possible to record a telephone interview. So for the next week or possibly 2 weeks, I'm going to take a hiatus from interviewing Jim DiGiamio, the author of the triumphal Destiny Betrayed about the JFK assassination and New Orleans DA Jim Garrison's investigation of same. We will resume with those interviews, and it is going to be a long series when the technological infrastructure here at the station permits, unfortunately, because things are being built, rebuilt, changed, etc. It just is not technologically possible to do a telephone interview. They will resume when that becomes possible. There is, however, no shortage of things going on. Although this program is titled Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, the vast majority of the articles have to do with technocratic fascism, and in particular with technocratic fascism as it applies to immigration. Once again, Facebook will be a major focal point of what I am talking about. I warned about Facebook years ago, back in 2010, and now that ubiquitous institution has sort of revealed itself to be what it really is. It isn't some nice, folksy, touchy-feely, warm social media get-together. It isn't like a high-tech, worldwide kumbaya sing-along. It is, in fact, what I refer to it as in For the Record 1021. It is Fascist Book. It is a fascist institution. And indeed, the Internet itself, there is a remarkable book which I will be doing more with in the future. It is called Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine. It is about the growth of the Internet and high tech. And the Internet itself grew out of the same DARPA project, Project Agile, that produced Agent Orange, the deadly carcinogenic herbicide that was widely used in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War and had devastating effects on the bodies of U.S. GIs and the Vietnamese people who lived in those areas. The raison d'etre for Project Agile and for the development of Agent Orange and for the development of the Internet was counterinsurgency. That is a dry-sounding word, but it masks or expresses in a relatively clinical and dry fashion some truly horrible, bloody, fascistic realities. Counterinsurgency embraces the Lethal Phoenix program in Vietnam. Writer Douglas Valentine has done arguably the best work on the Phoenix Program, and I suggest reading his book called The Phoenix Program or About the Phoenix Program and a follow-up volume called The CIA as Organized Crime, in which he talks about just what the Phoenix Program was all about. Counterinsurgency is a dynamic, a political methodology and goal that masks all sorts of horrors and that is at its fundamental level what Adolf Hitler referred to in his speech before the Industry Club of Dusseldorf in 1932. In that speech, Hitler said that democracy was not desirable because it was counter-evolutionary. Not counter-revolutionary, but counter-evolutionary. Because if you allow people democracy, you will allow inferior people to gain an unwarranted status or measure of equality. And that would be bad for the evolution of the species. It is an articulation of social Darwinism. And as we take a look at what is going on, and there is so much going on, what technology is permitting is something that Hitler would be just delighted with if he had the technology that we have, and his minions do have that technology. During the immediate run-up to the last midterm elections in November, a story that dominated the news, something that was flayed almost constantly by the Trump administration and message massaged almost constantly by its enabling Fox News people, was the migrant caravan from Latin America. By the same token, the so-called progressive media just fawned all over it, just as scapegoating immigration and immigrants for this country's problems is wrong. One should not make the mistake of looking upon immigrants and immigration as the solution to this country's problems. And immigrants aren't what, and immigration is not what is wrong with this country. And whatever one does with it, and certainly there should be a much more intelligent and humane policy than sued by the Trump administration. Nonetheless, just as immigrants are not what is wrong with this country, they are not going to be what is right with this country either. And the so-called progressive sector just played a beautiful second fiddle to Trump during this campaign. And what they didn't take into account was, and there is a pun there, is that many people took a look at this immigrant caravan and said, man, that is straight from central casting. If Donald Trump had been able to order something up from a Sears catalog, and Sears has now gone into bankruptcy, that would have been it. Many people were wondering, you know, boy, that sure is coincidental. And there is a famous quote attributed apparently wrongly to Franklin Delano Roosevelt that said that in politics, nothing happens by accident. And that certainly appears to have been the case with the migrant or immigrant caravan from Central America. We are going to take a look at how a fake Facebook account helped to generate that caravan and lend momentum to it. What is interesting is that although Facebook has now admitted that the salient account on Facebook was fake, they refuse to let us know who was behind it. Who were the individuals? Where are they from? And that really is absolutely essential, because that, at this point in time, is the most important thing about that caravan. Since so much of the brouhaha about it, and indeed the size and momentum of that caravan, appears to have been generated by a fake Facebook account, basically technological fascism in action, we really need to know who is behind that. But Facebook is keeping the face of that malefactor hidden from view. And again, I've been warning about Facebook for a long time. Everybody thought, oh, wow, this is so wonderful. I can put up all of my pictures and all of my friends' pictures, and we can all stay in close touch with one another. And, gee, this is just wonderful. It will enable us all to hold hands on our smartphones at the same time. What it will enable is the building of a fascus, the bundle of sticks bound by a leather thong with an axe head that was the symbol of the Roman Republic and is the iconic and psycholinguistic foundation of the term fascism or bundle think. And, well, I warned about Facebook, and things, unfortunately, are manifesting, as I have warned about initially in For the Record 710, recorded on Independence Day weekend in 2010. Article from Talking Points Memo Editor's Blog by Josh Marshall from December 6th of 2018. Fake Facebook account had role building immigrant caravan. Here's a very, very interesting BuzzFeed article which reports that a fake Facebook account appears to have had an important role stirring up the Honduran immigrant caravan, which coincided almost precisely with the 2018 midterm election. Facebook has admitted the account was an imposter account impersonating a prominent Honduran politician. One more time. Facebook has admitted the account was an imposter account impersonating a prominent Honduran politician. In other words, fake news. But it is refusing to release information about the account, who may have set it up, or what country it originated from. And we will have some insight later on in this discussion to the strong probability that whoever set it up didn't know much about Honduras. Continuing with Josh Marshall's article. For starters, it's important to note that whatever the role of this account or others that may come to light, it didn't create the Honduras immigration crisis that goes back to the later years of the Obama administration. There had been other, quote, caravans, unquote, the main point of which is to give migrants safety in numbers and not be prey to criminals and gangs on the journey north. But the timing of the October-November 2018 event has always been suspect. During the height of the news fever back in October, I reached out to a prominent U.S. pro-immigration activist and asked this person, quote, am I crazy to be suspicious that you've got the biggest caravan yet heading north timed almost perfectly for the final weeks of the U.S. election? The answer was very interesting. It was basically, yeah, we're all very suspicious, but there's no clear evidence that it hasn't grown up organically, unquote. One of the things that seemed so odd to me was that if you're an immigrant looking to escape the runaway murder rate and gang and paramilitary violence in Honduras, the worst possible time to make the attempt would be in the final days of the U.S. election campaign, in which the government has every incentive to make an example of you to show its anti-immigrant bona fides. Like, you may or may not make it at another less election-focused time, but you're definitely not getting into the country when Donald Trump is trying to use you as a scare cudgel to salvage control of Congress. What this person told me was that that wasn't that hard to understand. From years working with people in the region, this person told me you'd just be surprised. They're not as versed on the internal dynamics of our politics as you might think. This was a valuable corrective to my myopia and lack of perspective. I don't know much about the internal dynamics of their politics, and they don't know ours. Still, the person I was speaking to remained pretty suspicious. There just wasn't any evidence that it wasn't growing up in the way other immigrant caravans have over recent years. Now, we get to this BuzzFeed article. The account was created about a week before the caravan departed and impersonated a man named Bartolo Fuentes, who BuzzFeed identifies as, quote, a Honduran activist, journalist, and former lawmaker, unquote. Bartolo, of course, B-A-R-T-O-L-O, Fuentes, F-U-E-N-T-E-S. The subtleties to the story are important. Fuentes was initially skeptical about this particular caravan. It wasn't getting much attention, but it caught on so dramatically that he eventually joined it for a period of time, not as a prospective immigrant, but as a supporter. The account mainly used Facebook Messenger to communicate with other influential figures in Honduras and confirm Fuentes' support of the effort. In BuzzFeed's reconstruction, this bogus account didn't start the effort and actually kicked off just after the efforts to organize it got underway. But before the account got started, not many people seemed to be joining. Only after the account kicked into gear did enthusiasm and participation spike. The account also claimed falsely that the caravan was being led by a migrant rights organization called Pueblo Sin Fronteras. Later, once the caravan swelled to a massive scale, the Pueblo Sin Fronteras did get involved, though in a support rather than leadership role. The relevant point, though, is that it wasn't true when the imposter account falsely spread the word. It appears that this account helped the caravan gain key momentum to the point where its size became a self-fulfilling prophecy, spurring even more to join and groups which hadn't been supportive to get involved. This last sentence again. It appears that this account helped the caravan gain key momentum to the point where its size became a self-fulfilling prophecy, spurring even more to join and groups which hadn't been supportive to get involved. So far, it seems like we only know about this single account. It's hard to believe one Facebook account could play that decisive a role, but the account seems to have been sophisticated. And it is equally difficult to believe that a sophisticated operator or organization would have gone to such trouble and limited their efforts to a single imposter account. Obviously, there may be more than one account. This article, again, from Josh Marshall, Talking Points Memo. Fake Facebook account had role building immigrant caravan. That from December 6th of the year 2018.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com. Also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
And skipping down to the actual BuzzFeed article itself, we're going to excerpt this. This is by Ken Bensinger, B-E-N-S-I-N-G-E-R, a BuzzFeed news reporter. A mysterious imposter account was used on Facebook to drum up support for the migrant caravan. This also from December 6th of 2018. It reads in part, just before the migrant caravan set out from Honduras, an imposter stole the identity of a prominent early supporter on Facebook, using a fake account to try to boost the caravan's numbers. We can almost call this fake book. One more time. Just days before the migrant caravan set out from Honduras, an imposter stole the identity of a prominent early supporter on Facebook using a fake account to try to boost the caravan's numbers. Bartolo Fuentes, a Honduran activist, journalist, and former lawmaker, told BuzzFeed News that someone used the phony account to send Facebook messages falsely claiming that established migrant groups were organizing the effort. News like that, coming from a well-known public figure in Honduras such as Fuentes, could go a long way to convincing people to join the group of migrants traveling to the U.S. The caravan, which threaded north through Guatemala and Mexico, eventually ballooned in size to more than 7,000 people. It also became a political flashpoint in the lead-up to last month's U.S. midterm elections. In response to a query from BuzzFeed News, a Facebook spokesperson said the phony account, quote, was removed for violating the company's misrepresentation policy, unquote, but declined to share any further information, such as what country it originated from, what email address was used to open it, or any other details that might reveal who was behind it. Facebook added that, barring a subpoena or request from law enforcement, it does not share such information out of respect for the privacy of its users. This from the same company that plunged right into the Cambridge Analytica psyop in the campaign. This is grotesque. One more time, this last paragraph, if there is anything more nauseating than the hagiographic treatment of George H.W. Bush, who finally, at the end of his 94 years on this planet, finally did something right, he died, and was just lionized as Mr. Wonderful. Now, George H.W. Bush was a very important guy. He was a stone killer. He was really good and very, really good at what he did and very, very important. One of the most important men of the 20th and 21st centuries, in my opinion, and he was a stone killer. But talking about this, in response to a query from BuzzFeed News, a Facebook spokesperson said the phony account, quote, was removed for violating the company's misrepresentation policy, unquote, but declined to share any further information, such as what country it originated from, probably not Honduras, as we will see, what email address was used to open it, or any other details that might reveal who was behind it. Facebook added that, barring a subpoena or request from law enforcement, it does not share such information out of respect for the privacy of its users. That is, God, what hypocrisy. This is from the Cambridge Analytica co-conspirator. Anyway, continuing. Fuentes said he believes it's important to find out who was behind the rogue account, but hasn't gotten any answers from Facebook. Quote, who knows how many messages could have been sent, and who received them, unquote. As far as Fuentes can tell, the fake account, which primarily used Facebook Messenger to spread disinformation, was created less than a week before the caravan was scheduled to depart. On his real account, Fuentes did post a few times about the caravan, which he said he'd heard about in mid-September after being invited to join a small private WhatsApp group of would-be migrants. One of his posts from October 4th showed a stylized image of a bedraggled migrant and indicated the caravan, quote, spontaneously convened, unquote, without any formal organizer. But the messages being sent by the imposter, which also had Fuentes' photo, have a very different flavor, the former lawmaker learned. They claim that the prominent and influential migrant rights organization Pueblo Sin Fronteras, that's P-U-E-B-L-O, next word, capital S-I-N, Fronteras, capital F-R-O-N-T-E-R-A-S, was organizing the caravan and would be leading it on the arduous journey. But that news was fake, although Pueblo Sin Fronteras had organized several previous caravans, including a big one in the spring that attracted 1,500 people. It staunchly opposed the latest effort based on well-founded fears it would stoke anti-immigrant sentiment ahead of the elections. The bogus Fuentes account stands out for its sophistication and timing. It was created before the caravan departed, when the event had not yet attracted news coverage. It operated entirely in Spanish and precisely targeted influencers within the migrant rights community. And rather than criticize or undermine the caravan as other online campaigns would later attempt to do, it was used to legitimize the event, making a loosely structured grassroots event appear to be a well-organized effort by an established migrant group with a proven track record of successfully bringing Central American people to the U.S. border. Fuentes has been unable to get any information from Facebook about the account, but one small detail stood out. Whoever created the fake Facebook account listed the Honduran capital of Tegucigalpa as Fuentes' hometown, rather than the San Pedro Sula suburb of El Progreso. That might seem like a minor error, but it's the sort of mistake a foreigner, not a Honduran, would make about the well-known former lawmaker whose left-wing party stands in opposition to the current president's administration. When the imposter account began selling misinformation, the caravan was not expected to be huge. In fact, very few people even knew about it. Only around 160 men, women, and children showed up at the bus station in San Pedro Sula at the appointed time on early October 12th. Fuentes has no idea how many messages were sent by the imposter account or who might have received them. He said the WhatsApp group where he learned about the caravan had only a few dozen people in it, and he subsequently found out about a few other such groups that were equally small. He was surprised to see people continuing to arrive at the bus station throughout the morning, eventually attracting media coverage. So if, for those people who thought, you know, man, that migrant caravan was just exactly what the Republicans wanted, and it was just when they wanted it, and if you thought that was a little strange, well, you were right. It was, in part, a lot of the momentum came from a fake account. Once again, that from Ken Bensinger and Carla Zabludovsky, Zabludovsky, of BuzzFeed News from December 6th of 2018. A mysterious imposter account was used on Facebook to drum up support for the migrant campaign, and it would appear that whoever it was didn't know much about Mr. Fuentes and maybe not all that much about Honduras. Note again, Facebook's refusal to disclose information about the imposter, claiming those who violated their privacy, etc. They showed no such hesitation with the Cambridge Analytica PSYOP when they compromised the security of millions upon millions of people, something they have done in many other contexts as well. Something that we spoke about in connection with the campaign and the fascism, the politics of immigration and fascism, and that was the killing of Iowa college student Molly Tibbetts. She was allegedly killed by an illegal immigrant from Mexico who may have been, again, may have been subject to mind control. The fellow Christian, C-R-I-S-T-H-I-A-N Rivera, claimed to have blacked out, his memory blacked out, and then he discovered Molly Tibbetts' body. It is reminiscent in certain ways of Saran, and I have spoken about that in the past, and I will have a link to the past discussion. We noted that the dairy owners who owned the facility at which Mr. Rivera lived were dyed-in-the-wool Republican activists. It turns out now that the land on which he lived, the alleged killer and possible mind control victim, Christian Rivera, lived, was owned by a prominent GOP fundraiser who ran a dark money front that had very strong links to the Koch brothers, was eventually disowned, or the Koch brothers distanced themselves from the AFF organization because it was too funky, even for their lax moral fiber. Again, very interesting that this would be, at least from a right-wing Republican standpoint, high-profile case of an illegal immigrant man murdering a nice, young, fresh-faced, wholesome Iowa college student, and that's not to cast aspersions on the late unfortunate Molly Tibbetts, but she may very well have been a victim of a political provocation. And certainly the circumstances surrounding Christian Rivera, both his employment at the Lang family dairy facility and also the fact that he lived on land owned by Nicole Schlinger, S-C-H-L-I-N-G-E-R, deeply linked to the Koch brothers and Republican dark money financial octopus is more than a little interesting. The following is an AP story by Ryan J. Foley, F-O-L-E-Y, from August 24th of the year 2018. The man accused of killing Molly Tibbetts lived on land owned by GOP fundraiser. This is the focal point of a long post by Tara Fractal, to which I will link in the written description for the program. However, I'm going to read just a portion of this article. A top Republican fundraiser whose firm works for several prominent immigration hardliners is the partial owner of the land where the Mexican man accused of killing Iowa College student Molly Tibbetts lived rent-free, a farm spokeswoman said Friday. Nicole Schlinger, again S-C-H-L-I-N-G-E-R, has long been a key fundraiser and campaign contractor for GOP politicians in Iowa and beyond, including this cycle for Texas Senator Ted Cruz and Virginia Senate candidate Corey Stewart. Schlinger is the president of Campaign Headquarters, a call center that makes fundraising calls, identifies supporters, and helps turn out voters for conservative candidates and groups. Her business is one of the largest in Brooklyn, the central Iowa town where Tibbetts disappeared while out for a run on July 18th. Schlinger is married to Eric Lang, the president of the family-owned dairy that acknowledged providing employment and housing for the last 4 years to Christian Bahamia Rivera, the man charged with murder in Tibbetts' death. The couple, along with her husband's brother Craig Lang and his wife, own farmland outside Brooklyn that includes trailers where some of the dairy's employees live for free as a benefit of their employment, farm spokeswoman Eileen Wicksted, W-I-X-T-E-D, confirmed. She She said Rivera lived there for the duration of his employment, and about half of the farm's other 10 workers do so as well. Under the arrangement, the farming company pays the couples to rent the land, but workers do not have to pay, she said. In an email Friday, Schlinger said that she was shocked and deeply saddened, unquote, by Tibbetts' death and had never met Rivera. The perpetrator should be punished to the fullest extent of the law, and when he meets his maker, suffer the consequences he deserves, she wrote. She said that she was gifted an ownership interest in the land many years ago from her husband's family, and that she has no role in the farming operation. Still, the fact that one of his own operatives had indirect ties to the case could complicate GOP efforts to highlight the gruesome slaying in its political messaging ahead of the November midterm election. Dairy co-owner Craig Lang also was a Republican candidate for Iowa Agriculture Secretary, finishing third in a five-way race in the June primary. And Donald Trump made a point of highlighting this killing and did so on the same day that Michael Cohen, his attorney, rolled over, basically, and on which Paul Manafort, the U.S. intelligence officer who was instrumental in arranging the Maidan coup and the succession, the ascension to power of the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine, the same day that he was convicted, was the same day that Donald Trump and other prominent Republicans diverted attention from that, talking about this murder. And it turns out that the land on which he was living, in addition to the fact that the Lang family dairy facility was inextricably linked with prominent Iowa Republicans, Nicole Schlinger, a key fundraiser, and as those who wish to follow the link to the Terrafractal article will discover, someone who has very strong historical and operational links to the massive Republican dark money fundraising apparatus, including the Koch brothers.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terrafractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Speaking of immigration and some of the political things having to do with that, AI and similar interfacing technologies may be the anti-immigrant sort of electronic border wall that Donald Trump is seeking. From CNBC, an article by Jeff Daniels, this from May 15th of 2018. The article reads, in part, international travelers could find themselves in the near future talking to a lie-detecting kiosk when they're going through customs at an airport or border crossing. The same technology could be used to provide initial screening of refugees and asylum seekers at busy border crossings. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security funded research of the virtual border agent technology known as Automated Virtual Agent for Truth Assessment in Real Time, or AVATAR, capital A, or AVATAR in all capitals, about 6 years ago, and allowed it to be tested at the U.S.-Mexico border on travelers who volunteered to participate. Since then, Canada and the EU tested the robot-like kiosk that uses a virtual agent to ask travelers a series of questions. Last month, a caravan of migrants from Central America made it to the U.S.-Mexico border, where they sought asylum but were delayed several days because the port of entry near San Diego had reached full capacity. It's possible that a system such as AVATAR could provide initial screening of asylum seekers and others to help U.S. agents at busy border crossings such as San Diego's San Ysidro. Quote, the technology has much broader applications, potential aid. Unquote. Despite most of the funding for the original work coming primarily from the defense or homeland security departments a decade ago, according to Aaron Elkins, one of the developers of the system and an assistant professor at San Diego State University and director of its artificial intelligence lab. He added that Avatar is not a commercial product yet, but could be also used in human resources for screening. The U.S.-Mexico border trials with the advanced kiosk took place in Nogales, Arizona, and focused on low-risk travelers. The research team behind the system issued a report after the 2011-2012 trials that stated that the Avatar technology had potential use for processing applications for citizenship, asylum, and refugee status, and to reduce backlogs. It will be interesting to see if that gets deployed and to what extent, what happens when more fake news is generated to create large migrant caravans. It has some very interesting possibilities. And skipping down, because as I'm speaking on December 11th of 2018, there has been a lot of focus on Donald Trump's contretemps with Democratic congressional leaders about threatening to shut down the government if he doesn't get his border wall. This offers a high-tech possibility. It'd be interesting to see if we get a compromise here. In connection with Cambridge Analytica, we have spoken about that both in, For the Record, 946 in your Facebook Part 2 and in For the Record, 1021 in your Facebook Part 3, Faskus book, Cambridge Analytica and its parent firm SCL, which was involved in counterinsurgency. Again, the raison d'etre for the Internet and Project Agile, which also led to the development of Agent Orange. There is some more information and some insights, which I think can be applied to what we have seen about the fake Facebook account used to generate momentum for the very appropriately, from a Republican standpoint, timed migrant caravan that was treated as an invasion of the U.S. and got so much coverage at the time. And Facebook's policy with regard to the fake account, basically, they don't want to violate the privacy of whoever conducted or opened and managed that fake account. They had no such hesitation about compromising the privacy of millions and millions of Facebook users in connection with the Cambridge Analytica scandal. From Campaign Magazine of November 5th of 2018, we read the following from Kate McGee, M-A-G-E-E. Cambridge Analytica whistleblower Christopher Wiley. It's time to save creativity. Wiley says the following, skipping down. He believes that poor use of data is killing good ideas, and that unless effective regulation is enacted, society's worship of algorithms, unchecked data capture and use, and the likely spread of AI to all parts of our lives is causing us to sleepwalk into a bleak future. Not only are such circumstances a threat to ad land, why do you need an ad to tell you about a product? If an algorithm is choosing it for you, it is a threat to human free will. Quote, currently, the only morality of the algorithm is to optimize you as a consumer, and in many cases, you become the product. There are very few examples in human history of industries where people themselves become products, and those are scary industries. Slavery and the sex trade. One more time. Quote, currently, the only morality of the algorithm is to optimize you as a consumer, and in many cases, you become the product. There are very few examples in human history of industries where people themselves become products, and these are scary industries, slavery and the sex trade. And now we have social media, Wiley says. Continuing, quote, the problem with that and what makes it inherently different to selling, say, toothpaste, is that you're selling parts of people or access to people. People have an innate moral worth. If we don't respect that, we can create industries that do terrible things to people. We are heading blindly and quickly into an environment where this mentality is going to be amplified through artificial intelligence everywhere. We're humans, and we should be thinking about people first. Unquote. I'm going to read this last couple of sentences again for emphasis. The problem with that, and what makes it inherently different to selling, say, toothpaste, is that you're selling parts of people or access to people. People have an innate moral worth. If we do not respect that, we can create industries that do terrible things to people. We are heading blindly and quickly into an environment where this mentality is going to be amplified through artificial intelligence everywhere. We're humans, and we should be thinking about people first, unquote.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
And then back to Cambridge Analytica, and this against the background of Facebook, or fascist book, as I call it, saying, or maybe we should, in connection with that fake account, we call it fake book, being so self-righteous and pretentious. You know, we must protect the privacy of whoever was an imposter working a fake account for political purposes. This really, well, against the background of Cambridge Analytica, this is quite remarkable. A quick refresher on that scandal in Wiley's words, skipping down. Cambridge Analytica was a company spun out of SCL Group, a British military contractor that worked in information operations for armed forces around the world, i.e. counterinsurgency, as I mentioned. It was conducting research on how to scale and digitize information warfare, the use of information to confuse or degrade the efficacy of an enemy. As director of research, Wiley's original role was to map out for SCL how the company would take traditional information operations tactics into the online space, in particular by profiling people who would be susceptible to certain messaging. This morphed into the political arena. After Wiley left, the company worked on Donald Trump's U.S. presidential campaign and possibly the U.K.'s European Union referendum. In February 2016, Cambridge Analytica's former chief executive, Alexander Nix, wrote in Campaign that his company, quote, had already helped supercharge Leave.eu's social media campaign, unquote. Nix has strenuously denied this since, including to members of Parliament. It was this shift from the battlefield to politics, bear in mind what I said about Project Agile, and as Yasha Levine has written about in Surveillance Valley, the fact that counterinsurgency was the raison d'etre for the Internet, which grew out of the same Project Agile, the same DARPA Project Agile that made Agent Orange, okay? Resuming again with this article, it was this shift from the battlefield to politics that made Wiley uncomfortable. Quote, when you are working in information operations projects where your target is a combatant, the autonomy or agency of your targets is not your primary consideration. It is fair game to deny and manipulate information, coerce and exploit any mental vulnerabilities a person has, and to bring out the very worst characteristics in that person because they are an enemy, he says. But if you port that over to a democratic system, if you run campaigns designed to undermine people's ability to make free choices and to understand what is real and not real, you are undermining democracy and treating voters in the same way as you are treating terrorists, unquote. One of the reasons these techniques are so insidious is that being a target of a disinformation campaign is, quote, usually a pleasurable experience, unquote, because you are being fed content with which you are likely to agree, quote, you are being guided through something that you want to be true, unquote, Wiley says. To build an insurgency, bear in mind the counterinsurgency nature of the Internet, beginning again, to build an insurgency, he explains, you first target people who are more prone to having erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to like a group on social media. This last sentence one more time was that bullet. Again, bearing in mind the raison d'etre for Project Agile that Yasha Levine has written about in Surveillance Valley, the raison d'etre for the Internet is counterinsurgency, and it came out of the same DARPA project, Project Agile, as Agent Orange. Returning to the Campaign magazine article. To build an insurgency, Wiley explains, you first target people who are more prone to having erratic traits, paranoia, or conspiratorial thinking, and get them to, quote, like, unquote, a group on social media. They start engaging with the content which may or may not be true. Either way, quote, it feels good to see that information, unquote. When the group reaches 1,000 or 2,000 members, an event is set up in the local area. Even if only 5% show up, that's 50 to 100 people flooding a local coffee shop, Wiley says. This, he adds, validates their opinion because other people there are also talking about, quote, all these things that you've been seeing online in the depths of your den and getting angry about, unquote. People then start to believe the reason it's not shown on mainstream news channels is because, quote, they don't want you to know what the truth is, unquote. As Wiley sums it up, what started out as a fantasy online gets ported into the temporal world and becomes real to you because you see all these people around you, unquote. Just think about what was done with the migrant campaign. And a very interesting article from the New York Times by Nellie Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S, from the New York Times of November 9th of 2018. From the New York Times of November 9th of 2018 by Nellie Bowles, M-E-L-L-I-E, capital B-O-W-L-E-S. Tech CEOs are in love with their principal doomsayer. The futurist philosopher Yuval Noah Harari thinks Silicon Valley is an engine of dystopian ruin. So why do the digital elite adore him so? Speaking of Yuval Harari, he worries that Silicon Valley is undermining democracy and ushering in a dystopian hellscape in which voting is obsolete. He worries that by creating powerful influence machines to control billions of minds, the big tech companies are destroying the idea of a sovereign individual with free will. He worries that because the technological revolution's work requires so few laborers, Silicon Valley is creating a tiny ruling class and a teeming, furious, useless class, unquote. But lately, Mr. Harari is anxious about something much more personal. If this is his harrowing warning, then why do Silicon Valley CEOs love him so? And they ruminate about that. Part of the reason might be that Silicon Valley at a certain level is not optimistic on the future of democracy. The more of a mess Washington becomes, the more interested the tech world is in creating something else, and it might not look like elected representation. Rank-and-file coders have long been wary of regulation and curious about alternative forms of government. Recall the David Columbia quote about involving technocratic fascism that I've been warning about for years. Skipping down. Now, Harari has written a book about the present and how it could lead to that future. 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. It is meant to be read as a series of warnings. His recent TED talk was called Why Fascism is So Tempting and How Your Data Could Power It. His prophecies have made him a Cassandra in Silicon Valley, or at the very least, an unwelcome presence. And skipping down. It made him sad, he told me, to see people build things that destroy their own societies, but he works every day to maintain an academic distance and remind himself that humans are just animals. Quote, part of it is really coming from seeing humans as apes, and this is how they behave, he said, adding, they're chimpanzees, they're sapiens, this is what they do, unquote, skipping down. As we boarded the black gull-wing Tesla Mr. Harari had rented for his visit, he brought up Aldous Huxley. Generations have been horrified by his novel Brave New World, which depicts a regime of emotion control and painless consumption. Readers who encounter the book today, Mr. Harari said, often think it sounds great. Quote, everything is so nice, and in that way it is an intellectually disturbing book because you're really hard-pressed to explain what is wrong with it, he said. And you do get today a vision coming out of some people in Silicon Valley which goes in that direction. Boy, does it ever. I'm not going to read it, but I'm just, by way of what, not just tech stuff, and that's very interesting, but just plain old ordinary lying. This also tech-related. One of the things that we're told is that Facebook had all of these posts that were from, you know, Putin, Russia, etc., and this indicated Russian intervention in the U.S. elections. Well, you know, there are all sorts of people in Russia who use Facebook, and the CIA's cyber weaponry is designed to impersonate Russian cyber matters. An article from Consortium News of November 2nd of 2018 by Garrett, G-A-R-E-T-H, Porter, 33 trillion more reasons why the New York Times gets it wrong on Russiagate. And in this article, which would be linked at the end of the program, Garrett Porter points out, first of all, the posts were from both before and after the 2016 election. Obviously, there is no way that a post made after the election could influence the election. More importantly, there were 80,000 posts that Facebook said came from Russia. That was out of a total of 33 trillion posts. 33 trillion is 33 with 9 zeros after it. 80,000 is 8 with 4 zeros. To make the math for you, or do the math for you, that is significantly less than 1/400,000th of 1% of the Facebook posts that came from Russia. And aside from the fact, you know, that's not proof that it's from the Russian government, aside from the fact that a lot of people used, truly do not, included, do not use Facebook. 80,000 posts out of 33 trillion before and after the election, and we're told this constituted interference in the election. Less than 1/400,000th of 1% of the posts. It concludes For the Record program number 1039, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on December 11th of 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.